Well, Paul Tonka, very exciting. We're up there at Pluto, and you know, we're getting those photos, and it's can-do on the American part, but yet there are still some people living in poverty in this country. How do you reconcile all that?
Well, it's our budgeting is hopefully a reflection of our priorities, and there's a domestic agenda. There's a basic core agenda that needs to be addressed, starting with jobs, creating an environment that grows jobs. Obviously, government doesn't provide those jobs, but it can create the environment that nurtures job creation in the private sector. And many are hurt by this economy. Many are not bouncing back. Even though the job count may be up, we're concerned about what those jobs pay. And so we have to continue to work on, I think, an economy that produces jobs that are sound paying.
So along comes Donald Trump and goes, yeah, 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 and everybody salutes. And leading in all the Republican polls right now, in comes Paul Tonko, says exactly the right thing, you know, that this is disgraceful, the distance between the top and the bottom is too great and all the rest of it. Eyes glaze over, eyeballs go from one side of the head to the other. And Trump says, John McCain was was not a hero because he was in jail. He got caught. Getting caught is not a hero, he says, even though we know better. What is it about the American people where, I'm sorry about this diatribe, then less than half the people vote for president of the United States, our number one election?
And
can
where
anybody
someone,
concentrate on anything?
And where someone expressing anger and outrage can somewhat rise meteorically in the polls. So, yeah, it does tell you that, it may be a combative type of thinking that people have where they enjoy the combat. But we have such dire needs right now in this country. And with all of these candidates, and there's a larger field than average, you think we would be talking about a domestic agenda, how to grow jobs, how to strengthen the communities that
our jails,
that abound,
our prisons,
and how to exactly create a social and economic agenda that drives for justice.
Yes, and on the other hand, when I wrote my PhD dissertation on the plight of the mentally ill, there were people who would just simply tell me, politicians who would tell me, you know, mental patients don't have alumni associations. It was pretty brutal. But it's true, you know. How do you build a constituency for the very things you're talking about?
Well, I think we need to keep feeding ourselves facts. We need to be an academic society and an academic constituency. I think that the electorate needs to be taking those facts to mind. We, as candidates and as representatives, need to constantly reach to the stats out there and show people, feed data that are going to tell us the true story. And the absolute truth is that the purchasing power of the great many of us in the middle-income community has dwindled. And we don't have a strong comeback and a strong economic recovery if we don't have that purchasing power where it needs to be. And so I think that we need to hear a lot of talk about strengthening policy as it would lift the middle-income community and engage us in a way that provides for the investments that will get us there. And that means fairness in tax structure. We need to revisit the tax policy. We need to talk about investments in education, higher ed, and training, job training, because we're in an economy, an innovation economy, that is transitioning so rapidly that we need to keep pace with the technological skill sets that people need.
Well, we do, Paul, but as I've been trying to say in a somewhat frustrated manner, how is it that you get people to pay attention? Now, Bernie Sanders runs against Hillary Clinton. He starts talking about all of these problems you're talking about, but he's really talking about and hitting on her. In the constituency that they share, that's a powerful message. And all of a sudden we hear Hillary talking about the disenfranchised, you know, poor in this country. So if for no other reason, you know, there's some attention in the right political spot for this to happen. But otherwise, you're right. I know you're right. You've talked about this for years, and yet I'm concerned that nobody cares. You know, Donald Trump, when he stood up, he said something the other day that I thought was so extraordinary. He said, you know, I'm rich. He just said, I'm rich. That's American royalty we're talking to then. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's made it You know, from Horatio Algernon, I'm rich, and people buy it.
Well, I think and both sides may be to blame for this. We don't storytell well enough or often enough. And I think we need to personalize these discussions rather than just deal with it in policy format. Mm. And we need to talk about neighbors who are struggling, people who are living paycheck to paycheck, who can't set aside the dollars to perhaps assist their children someday with a college education or to maintain the roof over their head. I think that anecdotal evidence is powerful. And I would hope my party would speak to this in terms of optimism and empowerment. They want to know that there's an optimistic spin here. And there is. If we invest in the middle class, let people know what happens. When you give them those economic ladders of opportunity, things happen. Great things happen with the economy. And people just need to be fed some of the anecdotal evidence. That's powerful.
Well, you know, here you are in the United States Congress. Your party has been making this argument, and they're now in the minority. What's that about?
I think it's about money in politics, and we have to do something about that. The some of the recent Supreme Court decisions made it even more awkward. And when you have a lopsided situation where you don't have transparency and accountability, reporting requirements, you know, just the fact that you want disclosure on some of these campaign contributions so that the ads perhaps that are produced by these contributions are targeting who gave the cash. You know, and some of the very few in this country that have the deepest pockets are now paying for seats in Congress, and that's not the end of the story. They then have an agenda that they want fulfilled.
But you don't think these guys who sit across the aisle from you are going to do anything about changing this,
well,
do you?
Well, that's the situation here. We have to drive public sentiment to drive the process because, yes, more and more people are comfortable with the system the way it is because that keeps them or gets them to Congress. And when you look at some of these dollars, you know, where people have given immense amounts of money and they are a very small reflection, a drop in the bucket of the national population, of our nation's population, they are having an undue influence on these outcomes. And the agenda is very, very restrictive and very counterproductive to the great many who are in the middle-income community.
Well, as long as you have a Supreme Court and you have Citizens United and you have, you know, five Republicans sitting up there paying homage to the people who appointed them, that ain't going to change.
Well, I hear you, but even some of the constitutional reforms that we could do, while they're going to take a while, you know, you have to look at this in long-term format, and somewhere you have to start the process. And some of the more immediate opportunities with legislation that would address disclosure, you know, just truth in advertising would be helpful. And I know that Representative Van Hollen has introduced such legislation, and I've joined in his effort. But you see what that means to issues out there that are just ignored and where the economic justice is not provided. We as a nation have got to resolve that because, you know, you think of the post-World War II days when we really saw neighborhoods in a post-World War II strategy, building and becoming vibrant and offering all sorts of economic opportunity. And, you know, even into the 90s, it was robust. And now it's flattened. And you see the relationship, the contrast between CEO salaries and those of the average worker. Mm. That wedge has grown so drastically wide. Mm. And we are better than that. We need to do better than that. And I believe we can if we storytell.
Paul Tonko, great to talk to you. I love your idea about storytelling because it does make all the difference. We know that. And we come back the next time. I want to ask you about something very personal.